AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Tick, tick, tick. Boom. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is officially your favorite day of the week. Meltdown Monday has just arrived. It has been an epic 7 days since we last saw you. And yes, don't be shy. We do see you. We read all your wonderful comments. It's been beautiful across the world as we are stretched from the far ends of Tucson, Arizona to the musty, mucky, dirty, gritty streets of Manchester, England. My name's Tom Finkill. I am your host with the most. And we are joined with a little frog in my throat. That's fine. These frogs happen, especially chocolate frogs. They happen as well. We are joined by the most incredible guest. I'm going to go so far as to say he is the biggest guest that we have ever had here on The Meltdown. And he is going to truly tune up that very special thing that we are all just a cog in. Oh, yes, the machine is going to hit us hard. And speaking of hitting us hard, from my epic week, I know that across the pond, there's been a beautiful week as well. My creation of devastation, brother, is ready to lay it on you. Brian Clark, boom, take it away.
Good morning, Tomcat, and thank you for that great intro. It's getting hot outside, and summer is officially here. The temperatures are rising here in Tucson, Arizona, and the Meltdown audience is growing each and every day. Don't get it twisted. Others talk about it. We are about it. We enjoy great conversation with superstars of pro wrestling, MMA, the NFL, and Hollywood celebrities. This is episode 12, and I am excited about today's guest because he is a former FTW champion, a casino ladder match champion, an Impact World champion, an X Division champion. He has held titles in Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, and Worldwide, and is a current AEW superstar. YouTube Universe, give it up for the machine, Brian Cage.
What a huge pop right there. I appreciate that. You know, that introduction was great. You know, Brian, he popped for his introduction. The whole time I'm laughing because, and I don't know if this will show up like on the actual stream or not, if you can see, but I'm looking at all the little name tags and I just got this new laptop, right? And it's through Microsoft. And so it's through like my Hotmail account, which I don't even use anymore. It's from a junior high East Coast. So I see the Pimp D is my name. Instead of Brian Cage, like it normally would be.
Oh, that's great.
So when I first made my very first email, I just like, what should I make it? I don't know. And I remember we used to always do this, like, these smooth stuff was a very popular thing me and my brothers would do. And it was a playoff of the Beavis and Butthead episode where they cut off the hair and try to give themselves beards. Be like, damn, I'm smooth. But so anyways, I was like, and that's also when, like, Pimp was really becoming popular too. I remember that in junior high, I was like, oh, you're a pimp. So I'm like, oh, you'd be Pimp D Smooth. That's the coolest name ever. And then now we got Pimp D up there as my name. So anyways,
we're definitely staying on it.
I don't even see it, but you know, we got to leave it now. I mean, you know,
well, yeah, that's, I wasn't even sure if anybody could, but the fact that I could, I was, yeah, like, I don't know if anybody else can, but I have to address that because
Well, we do see the nice Mortal Kombat shirt. So that is
sure. No.
Yeah,
no, exactly. It's Mortis Kombat.
Yeah, even better.
Mortis Kombat. It's, yeah. That's a nice little Easter egg right there for the fans.
Yeah, love it. Great choice, by the way. Hey, Brian, we would like to open up the show today and talk about your early athletic career, as far as maybe in high school, or when did you realize that you were going to be the amazing athlete that you have turned out to be? And also, I'll throw this nugget in there, too. A lot of people do not know that you were in the high school graduating class of Aaron Rodgers, NFL. Yes, yes.
Okay. I knew that was coming, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, funny enough, I didn't play any high school sports at all, and I regret that, especially wrestling, because now whenever I roll around, you know, like with the jiu-jitsu, whatever, everyone always thinks like I'm a college wrestler just for my natural, I guess, movements or whatnot. And I go, no, but I wish I would have. And I remember, like, I wanted to be a pro wrestler since I was 10 years old. And I remember talking about that, like, in junior high school, and everyone would be like, go for the team. And in my head, I'm like, nah, that's not real wrestling. That's lame. That's not, you know what I mean? Like I'm going to do the real stuff, like the real pro wrestling. Needless to say, like, oh, yeah, that would have been great. I feel like I would have done really well at it. And it does transition well into wrestling. I played a couple of seasons of Pop Warner football. And my mom, I always tell the story. My mom put me in the team across town. So, like, all my friends and everybody I knew was on the other team. So I hated going because, like, I didn't know anybody, and it turned me off. Now, I played football. I played all the sports. We'll say backyard sports. I played everything with all my friends, and I was good at it. But I had no desire to spend any more time at school and be and pursue any of that, or, you know, try to go to college for it or whatever else. I actually was a huge skateboarder. I did skateboard a lot. I also did my fair share of backyard wrestling. But yeah, I was definitely not the machine. I graduated 155 pounds. And the year I graduated high school, my sophomore PE teacher, who was a good friend of mine and was also a wrestling fan and knew how much I wanted to be a wrestler, was like, hey, I know I just started getting into personal fitness as an elective class senior year. And he goes, if you want, I have summer school. I can open up the gym for you. So that summer is really when I dedicated everything and changed a lot. I woke up every morning at 7, no matter how late I stayed up, got up, jogged to my high school, which was probably a little over a mile. And then I would get inside the weight room and I just figured it out. I would just work out and just, I did that the whole week, all summer long, and fell in love with it. And that just became, a big stepping stone to move on forward for me.
So the weight room, yeah, the weight room really was the beginning, like so many people, myself included. I totally understand how you did that. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. And even then too, I said, like, we did backyard wrestling. I actually eventually, when we started, you know, training, I was first training at a local school, semi-local school to where I was at, called PCW. There's so many PCWs too in the world of independent wrestling, pro championship wrestlings. But I actually ended up getting my own ring and then training more on top of that. And I actually even started running my own shows for quite a long time too, which a lot of people don't know. And actually, that's where I got to wrestle Canyon for the very first time, is in my hometown, in my own promotion. And that was still to this day one of the coolest, most memorable experiences, not just of my career, but of my life. So
awesome. We are always sending our love out to the big man upstairs. Yes, Mr. Chris Canyon, we love it. And I'm going to touch upon that with you guys later, because I feel that's a wonderful conversation that'll mean so much to you both. However, just as we're beginning, just as we're getting into chronological order of things, as you're growing up a wrestling fan, who's your go-to guy? Which promotion were you loving most? Who was the one that really sucked you into the brand?
So as a kid, right? You know, obviously everybody loved, it's so funny, I never liked the number one guy. So, like, everyone loves Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan was cool, but I was like, nah, like, I like Savage and Warrior more before Warrior, you know, went above him. But it was funny, because, like, even like in cartoons, like, I didn't like Bugs Bunny, I didn't like Mickey Mouse, I really didn't like Michael Jordan. Like, everyone who was everyone's favorite, who was like the number one guy, I was like, nah, forget that guy. Which is true too, I want to be Luigi. I didn't want to be Mario.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
I wanted the runner-up guy to be the guy. But yeah, those are my first, like, you know, favorites as a kid growing up, of course. And then like my top two when I started like really like wanting to be a wrestler was Scott Hall, and then number one was Shawn Michaels for sure. And then as that progressed into high school, then and I would say like the three that I really liked that I also wanted to emulate in the ring were the three Chris's, which was Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, and of course Chris Kanyon.
Wow.
What a lineup, right?
Yeah. I mean, classics, yes.
I definitely heard Adam Bomb in there as well. I definitely heard that, right? We love it. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about training with Kanyon. I'm going to let you guys just have a beautiful Kanyon discussion. I'm going to sit back and just like the listeners of The Meltdown, I'm going to absorb this beautiful moment. Let's have a little chat about Chris.
You want to start, yeah. Brian, or?
Well, I would love to know, you know, because after I retired, I know that Chris was still in the business. I'm just curious where you guys met. I know you mentioned the backyard match there, but how did it progress? How did the things that you were able to take away from Chris's style, which I know had a lot to do with your style? And just tell me about maybe some of the things that you learned from him.
So, I mean, I'll just give it all. So obviously as you guys were both coming up, right, as Wrath and Mortis, obviously because that's sweet gimmicks, obviously it was Mortal Kombat related, but the moveset he would do, I was like, oh man, it was so cool. And he'd reach out to me. And I remember too, especially that the DDT he took from Raven, the great bump and sell he took from that one, like that eliminated the Mortis character was so great. And then when he came back as Kanyon, and then he just started hitting all these cool moves and this, and that was definitely like, I mean, I've always loved the sports aspect of wrestling more than the sports entertainment aspect. Not say that one's right, one wrong, or better, but when you can watch it and you get sucked in and you forget, you know, that it's a work and it's just such an awesome athletic performance, I'm really into that. So then when people bring out stuff like Kanyon would that was so memorable, like that would always stick out to me. So like if I watched a Monday Nitro, you know, if Kanyon hit some cool move I'd never seen before, that would register and that would stick out to me more than anything else. Tuesday in high school when we're talking about it. So I remember thinking like, I want to have a cool moveset like that. And I want to, you know, I want to emulate that style and have to be like, oh man, I've never seen anybody do something like that. That was so cool. That was so different. So unique. And even in my early backyard wrestling days, where we're wrestling actually on the grass and stuff. I remember I used to always, you know, I would try to like emulate any of his moves. I'm just like, even, and then on WCW Interview Revenge, the video game, where he was like the coolest character, I'd always be him. Anyways, you fast forward. I never went to a WCW show. I watched them both. I loved them both, but WWF, whatever you want to call it, was, you know, always a little bit higher. So I never had gone to a WCW live event at all. And when the invasion angle happened, it was in Sacramento. We got tickets. We were going. I remember my number one goal was to have a Who Better Than Kanyon sign because I'd never seen him live. So I have the Who Better Than Kanyon sign. We're sixth row. It's the episode where Kurt Angle comes out and sprays them all down with milk. And in the middle of that, when Kanyon has the Who Better Than Austin shirt, somebody throws something in the ring and Tommy Dreamer hits one corner and the corner right in front of us, Kanyon comes up. So I took that as my opportunity. I stood up on my chair. I had my sign up. He looked right at it. Like I knew he saw it. Like that was my mission accomplished. I felt, you know, overjoyed. So as the show goes off the air and the, you know, they're doing their extra bit and they're all walking backstage, we're all starting to head up. Right as they're heading backstage, Kanyon starts pointing at me and I'm like, I point to myself, like to make sure he's pointing at me. And he goes, yeah. And he just gives me the thumbs up. So I thought that was so cool. And then as we're walking upstairs, I look back down and, I can see Kanyon come back around like the Titantron. So I run back down the stairs. I remember blowing through like man, woman, child, whatever. I literally actually even ran into the safety rail where I kind of fell forward into it. And he kind of caught it. He goes, whoa, get easy, kid. And he like kind of helps me like stand up. And then he gives me the Who Better Than Austin shirt. And watching you guys in your cool little, backgrounds, I explained before we started this podcast, I'm upstairs in my loft because of my knee. It's more comfortable. But I wish now I was in my little gimmick room with all my titles because I actually still have the Who Better Than Austin shirt, also signed by Kanyon, in that room. So, yes, very, very cool trophy. And I remember waiting outside by the cars afterwards, too. I mean, I was so overjoyed. And I remember like no selling every any and all wrestler came out. And when Canyon Fly came out, you know, I was waving my sign. He came over. He signed the sign. He signed the T-shirt, shared some words with each other. Absolutely elated. And I talked about having the match with him in my hometown of my promotion, Main Event Wrestling Federation, being one of the coolest moments of my life. That moment right there too, I always wanted to be a wrestler, but that moment was so cool, so awesome. I remember retelling the story so many times, and that enhanced my desire to be a wrestler that much more, because I wanted to have that same feeling to make some other kid's night that much more memorable and meaningful that he just did for me. So that really reached out to me big time.
That's a great story. I didn't know that, but I'm glad that our listeners get to hear that, because now they can see. I mean, because your moveset, Brian, is unbelievable. I spent this past week, I mean, I watched you most of your career. There's a few times that I may have missed some stuff, but man, I just going through some of your movesets are just amazing. Some of the finished moves you're using, and the matches you have with even like cruiserweights are, let me just look at my list here, because I had so many. Your career, like I said, has been filled with, it's like I think to myself, you know, does this guy ever have a bad match? I'm looking. I'm like, okay, where is he going to miss something? But like the Weapon X as a finish is unbelievable. The Dante Martin match on Rampage, loved it. You guys were doing everything. And then I pulled up you and Cardona in the 25-minute match in Australia where you fought all over the arena.
The crowd, yeah.
Yeah, so just some good stuff, man. I just want you to know that you are doing the amazing stuff that I'm sure young fans do appreciate. And
I'm sure Canyon would have appreciated it as well. He was a true innovator of offense, right? And he came up with the most incredible moves each and every week. I mean, I know as a kid, it was always a highlight for me to see these big guys hitting the most incredible moves and something new and fresh every week. And I was very similar to you, that we were hooked. We were of a time frame where I'm like an 84 kid. So everything that was flying out on the shelves, we were picking up. So WCW NWO Revenge was like our go-to to play. And it was always going to be Wrath and Mortis and Glacier. And it was just a full-on fest because they have the best moveset. So much so that Brian's actually just got a brand new backdrop right behind you, brother. Show Brian what you've got. There it is.
That was given to me this past week. Yeah.
It's great.
I'm loving it.
We still have like even my last big birthday party. We had my friend brought a 64. And we had a huge everyone, even people who had never even played the game. We had a huge giant tournament of everyone playing Revenge, and also the classic of just having the big 40-man battle royal. And then every time someone gets eliminated, you pass the controller around.
Comes down, you know it's trouble, right?
Oh yeah. You know what? He had a cheap little set, and then also I hated wrestling Goldberg in that game too, because I felt like he was always like overpowered to everyone else too. Like when anybody would pick them, I'm like, come on, man, don't do that. Like pick somebody else.
Many arguments for our generation.
And then especially when you find out about the joystick, when you can wiggle to get the automatic kick out. Oh yeah, me and my brothers and friends got a couple fist fights a couple of times over that one. Gets a little heated. Like, you wiggled it. I fucking know you did.
That's great.
What a story. I love it. I love it. I love the way that we are bonding across the world from a game that was out like, 28 years ago, something like that.
That game, I feel really helped just transcend and transition wrestling to everyone, to like the pop culture stuff. It was funny too, because also, even though like during my junior high school time, which is about the same as yours, wrestling was booming, right? I feel like everyone loved it. Everyone watched it. But for whatever reason, it was still always like uncool to like it, like especially at school. Even though like secretly, it's like everyone was a closet wrestling fan. It was so funny. And then I remember wearing my very first like wrestling shirt to school. And like everyone was kind of being like, whoa. It's almost like a political statement. It was so funny. Like it was so weird. Like and certain wrestling fans would pop for it. Then people were like, ooh. And obviously too at that time too, like gay was always like the big slang word in Northern California too for being like stupid, right? So like, oh, look at this guy's gay, he likes wrestling. That's how it was always like presented. I'm like, shut up. And I always get arguments with them. And there's a connection here to Revenge. So I remember actually when I was graduating eighth grade, being in line, and these kids were giving me crap, right, for liking wrestling. And they start talking a lot about a lot of different wrestlers and all, like, and people's movesets and their finish. Like, oh, but you like to do, oh, Bret Hart and the sharpshooter and this, like, whatever, just saying stuff. Yeah. And I go, man, for hating wrestling, you sure know an awful lot about it. And then he goes, well, that's only because, you know, we played, you know, the revenge game on 64 is pretty cool. And I go, it is. It's amazing. I go, here's a problem with that, though. Everyone you just named is from WWF, and revenge is a WCW game. So, sorry. I got
to. Mic drop moment, right? That's awesome, dude. That's awesome. But no, I completely echo those sentiments. It was the exact same for us. We were of that age where, like, Friday nights were our big nights. And unlike the US, where you guys had Nitro and Raw on a Monday and it was channel hopping on a Monday, we had them on a Friday night. So we had everything on tape delay. So it was our sort of our friendship group, our bubbles that came from everywhere and hit house parties on a Friday night. And we used to channel hop between Raw and Nitro. And there was obviously a massive contingent that were like, oh, wrestling sucks, man. And literally by the end of the episode, they were like glued to the TV. Like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen with this guy? And what's he doing there for the blah, 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 blah. That's what wrestling does.
It would still happen throughout high school too, where people would, like, you know, because especially too with NWO and DX and stuff, there's a lot more shirts being worn, and people would kind of like would snicker a little bit, but then, like, when no one was looking, they'd be like, "Hey, did you watch Raw last night?" Or like, "Coach, you what?" I actually even started, so I'd watch the first hour of Nitro, then I would record the second 2 hours and watch Raw, and then I would rewatch or finish Nitro the next day. So everyone started spoiling. They'd be like, "Oh, did you watch Nitro last night?" And I would just go, I watched the first hour. I recorded it, which would imply I'm going to watch it. And then they'd be like, "Oh, Sting won the title," or, you know, whatever happened. Oh, and I was like, "Oh!" So I would literally stay up watching Raw, and then I would get up at 5 a.m. before school just to finish Nitro before I went to school, so that way nobody could spoil anything. Like, "Did you watch Raw or did you watch Nitro?" I go, "I watched them both. I got them both on lockdown. You're not ruining anything for me." Every Tuesday I would wake up so early. Like, and I remember too, my mom would always want us to go to bed, like, before Raw would end. If that's too late, you have to go to bed. And then I'd be like, "Look, I'm gonna watch all of Raw." Even sometimes if we did have to go to bed, I'd just, like, mute it and watch the rest of it. As like, I'd still get my ass up super early just to go downstairs and watch Nitro before I went to school. So, dedicated wrestling fan right here.
That is dedication to the brand. And speaking of brands, you've been a part of so many wonderful brands throughout your career, whether it be FCW, whether it be Lucha Underground, whether it be Impact, and finding your home and becoming All Elite. Let's have a little chat about your current beautiful home in AEW, and obviously its sister company as well, Ring of Honor, having tied all these beautiful things together to make a super company, as it were, which gives opportunities to so many more wonderful people. Now, your debut came during the pandemic era as well in 2020. How was that? How was it wrestling in front of no fans, really? Was it that bad?
It was so bad. So here's, you know, it's so funny to where so many different stories and things are jumping out at me, and they're all over the place. But and I even want to, like, touch back on a couple of things. But also maybe a little unknown is in 2019, mm-hmm. I was actually supposed to be in the original Double or Nothing Battle Royal.
Oh, wow.
And I was Impact World Champion. So nobody knew. It was so low key. Like, none of the people, even the Battle Royal, knew. They're waiting for me to show up from Starcast. They had me booked. I mean, looking strong as hell. I was dominating everybody. I was eliminating everyone. It was going to come down to me and Hangman. And then I was the Hangman would still go up. They didn't go on to work Jericho. So it's fine with me. And I remember even originally talking to Cody about it. And he goes, "Hey," like, this was a few months prior, he goes, "We really want you on the show. We really want you to make you look good, but you can't beat any of our signed talent." He goes, "However, I don't want anyone beating you though either." And this was before I was even Impact World Champion. He goes, "So are you okay if we just put you in the Battle Royal and shine you up there?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't care." He's like, "Whatever. Beggars can't be choosers." And then, yeah, I was the world champion. And but yeah, they were shining me up so good. And the original All Out, or I guess All In Battle Royal, was so much fun. I was part of that, and I was Impact Activist champion then as well. Anyway, so we're putting the match together. It's awesome. It's great. Here we go. And it's like an hour before start time. And I get a phone call. I get a phone call from Ed Norton. And I also got text from Scott and Don Callis. And they said, I can't do the match. And I was like, wait, what? What are you talking about? They're like, oh, if you're losing, you can't do the match. Like, you're our champion, you can't lose. I go, I'm losing the match, but I'm not getting beat. You know, it's a battle royal. Like, no one's defeating me. And I go, and also, let's be honest too. Like, I was like, it's awesome for me. It's cool for AEW. I go, but really who benefits the most here, in my opinion, was Impact. Cause I'm going to come out with the Impact Wrestling world title. And nobody knows I'm going to be there. Nobody knows I'm involved in there. It's going to be huge shock and pop surprise, which are, you know, are so hard to get in wrestling. So I was really stoked for that. But I felt like, oh, then there's like the question, like, oh, is Impact going to work with AEW? What's going to happen? Oh, I just felt like it was going to do wonders for them. Didn't matter if I didn't win the Battle Royal. I was still going to win. In fact, that I was eliminating the most people. I was probably going to shine and look the most beast, which also then would have gave Hangman a bigger rub when he won the Battle Royal. Nevertheless, I argued back and forth with it. I even had Billy Gunn and VJ Whitmer, like, you know, looking at my contract, and not to get too sophisticated with it, but even how our contract was with Impact, we were actually signed underneath our Lucha Underground contract, because we were still signed to Lucha Underground when we both, myself and the Lucha Brothers, and I think even Taya and Johnny were all like signed additionally to Impact, but it was still underneath the Lucha Underground contract. And that was also one of my arguments, because the Lucha Brothers were there working the Young Bucks. So I'm like, if they're on the show they're losing, why can't I be on the show? Like, and again, they kept going back to me, just me being the world champion. I fought and I kicked. Kenny Omega was texting with Don and then fighting with them. I mean, everyone was. And basically it came down to what they told me was, if I did the show, they were going to sue me. They were going to sue AEW, and you know, that would be that. And I remember even Billy was like, look, man, he's like, here's what happens. Like, and we're looking at my contract too. Like, he goes, legally, it doesn't look like they can't. Like they're not going to win. He goes, but what you're going to do then is you're still going to waste your own time and money, AEW's time and money, and piss off Impact. So now you're going to have heat with two major companies. And I was like, and you're going to, you know, and it's going to dip into your wallet. So like, you got to ask yourself, is it really going to be worth it? So I literally last minute was like, and I told them I can't do the match now. And then they had to scramble. If you've seen that Mad Battle Royal too, it's okay. But they literally had to scramble and redo the entire Battle Royal now. And funny enough, also, Orange Cassidy, who wasn't even going to be in the match, got added because now they were a person down. And then look what happened for Orange in his career. So it worked out pretty well for him. You know, he's phenomenal talent. But yeah. Really bummed I had to miss that. Again, there's a connection to the story. So then the following year, now I'm signed to AEW. Now I get to make my surprise debut at AEW, but to absolutely nobody. Definitely not. Yeah, it was a big loss. Came on, I was like, oh. And just that whole realm and that era, the pandemic era, it was, I feel like too, I saw good performances, but I feel like there's a lot of matches that could have been better, should have been better. And I feel like definitely my interaction and overall character and everything else was definitely, I feel like that's even got the most criticized, because I just seemed more bland. But I'm like, also like, yeah, there's nobody to play. There's no reaction from anything. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, you're just there. And also too, you're outside. Sometimes we were filming it when we would record, it would be like 2 a.m, 40 degrees outside. Freaking and the empathy. Yeah, it was miserable. It was miserable. I mean, I'm glad that we still have to do it and we have the opportunity rather than not wrestling, obviously. But yeah, had it been, you know, with the full crowd, oh man, that would have been phenomenal.
What a massive pop it would have been. I know I popped on my couch when we saw you made that debut with Taz. But what I've taken from that beautiful story that you've just laid out, two things. There is a lot of pettiness in wrestling. That would have gone over super, super huge in 2019. Imagine the pop that you'd have got. And they put you in the diesel spot as well. You're coming in strong. It does nothing but positive things. And that's what we do here on The Meltdown. We talk about positive things. It would have done nothing but positive things for Impact. The other thing that I took away from that story is that Orange Cassidy owes you a lot of residuals. So send your checks courtesy of Brian Cage.
See, look at me. I'm just the captain selfless guy. I'm always looking out for everybody else. You see? See, I put him over.
Always positive.
Trying to help him out. Say, Brian, your machine mindset that you have is very positive. I mean, your thought process, that's something that you carry every day, I'm guessing, in training and in the ring. For your comeback now with the knee injuries, how much are you going to do things differently as far as overcoming the injury itself? And I don't think your mindset is going to change because, am I right on that?
Well, for sure. So, I mean, I do feel like, and I've got criticized by a lot of people, and in a good way, constructive criticized for doing, you know, too much, which obviously too is also like the move set and stuff, which is inspired by Canyon. Mm-hmm. Not only doing too much, but obviously giving way too much. I just said I was being too selfless as far as just leaving my feet and bumping and just putting everywhere. And I, because I'm always doing it for the sake of the match. I want to have this awesome, you know, 50-50 match with everyone. And there's been times I've watched it back and I go, I guess that does look a little silly, huh? That we're doing like, because I'm going out there and I want to have this, like, you know, awesome, like, you know, Will Ospreay versus Ricochet, whatever, 50-50 type of matchup. But then when you look at it and I come off the crowd and how I, you know, the difference there, I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, maybe we shouldn't wrestle like that all the time. Even though I love that, and I love that ability to, and I love that I'm able to, which also I feel like vastly surprises people. And I feel like that's even what originally got me to the next level and started to get over and booked all across the world, you know, before I had any contracts, was just the fact that people would see my size and assume I couldn't wrestle. You know, like the old school classic body guys of the 80s, like, oh, who's this guy that's gonna be, you know, non-athletic and can't do stuff? And then when they see me go out there and perform to the level that I am and being able to do the stuff I can do, and then also as surprisingly or deceptively agile and athletic, it really, you know, it transcended me and helped me grow to the next level. Now, going back to your question, I do want to change my style a little bit, possibly just with we'll see what creative has for me when I come back, but I definitely have a lot of different ideas and some stuff I want to change. But at the same time, because actually my knees have been killing me forever, I don't give it out like candy. And even then, I think I've only even done like 5 dives in like my entire career in AEW, which is nothing to what I used to always do. But I definitely want, I'm excited to bust certain things back out because my knee won't be in the same pain that it was at one point in time.
Yeah,
got it. That makes sense. I also watched a match last night, actually, of you and Moose. So it just goes to show with Moose was what, 6'5", 290, and you guys were doing everything. So it just goes to show you can do that type of match with a heavyweight, a super heavy, and a cruiserweight. So, I mean, you're so versatile and you being so athletic, man. It is amazing.
I got to get ready. This is ridiculous.
Look, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. If you guys heard, my little son just came calling up here in the background, giving me the happy eyes. Oh, you're gonna play the chant? Okay, turn the TV on.
We are all waving. We're waving to you. So we're good. We are all a family community here at the Meltdown. So yeah,
I don't plan on changing, you know, how I want to wrestle, but there will be a little bit of a change to help present me, I think, as the overall character of the machine better than I thought I probably should have been portraying for far too long. But I feel like I've been too selfless and wanting to just have an awesome match, which really helps the person and my opponent in the match. I think does a lot less for me. And that's something too. Also, like, I feel like a lot of people are usually pretty excited to wrestle me because they know we're gonna have a good match. But they also know, like, even the extras sometimes in AEW, they also know, like, I'm gonna be a lot more giving than a lot of other people. And it's funny, when you look at my size and stature, I should be probably less giving, but like, oh, here, this guy's, he could, it's also because I just want a fun competitive match. You know, when we're also like, if we're out there just squashing guys, you know, night after night after night, like that, to me, like, well, that's not artistically challenging or fun. And that's not what I want to do. Now, obviously I know there's a rhyme and reason for everything, but I'm just kind of venting now. Anyways.
No, it makes sense. I'm looking forward to it, man. Just, we want you to heal up and, you're definitely going to be dominating as you always have been.
And taking it to the next level as well, as you just beautifully articulated, it's just finding that mesh where it's not always 50-50 all the time in terms of if you were paired up against, for example, an individual who is a lot smaller than you, you don't want to be having that 50-50 match all the time. If it's two big guys slapping meat and it is you and a Keith Lee, you can completely understand it. But if you're hitting that move that Keith Lee sells for only very smallly, the small guy should really go over the top with the sell, right?
So a lot of people will compare, like, oh, big guy shouldn't do this athletic move. He's too big for that move. Or, oh, this little guy shouldn't be able to do that move. He's too small. But that's one thing I feel like doesn't get mentioned enough is how much the little guys sell for the big. So case in point. So if there's two, like, small cruisers fighting and somebody hits a big clothesline and they do a big inside out 360 flying bump, whatever, off the clothesline. Hey, which looks cool. It's great, whatever. But I'm like, so now what are you going to do? What are you going to do when I hit you with that clothesline? You know what I mean? Like
it's how, like, decapitation, right? Like, that's what it should be. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, that's one case in point to it and how that works. Also, when I wrestled Hook, and I did that whole program with Hook, that was one time. Here, popping down. You can't be here. Play at that. That was one time too, where I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this, you know, more challenging. So I made sure, and all of our, we had a bunch of different 6-man matches, 8-man matches, run-ins, interactions, and I made sure he never bumped me or did anything to me one time. And I was like, because that way, when we finally get to the match, you could try to bump me a couple times, and then when you finally bump me, now it matters. Whereas if I'm out trying to do a run-in and you come out and stop me and you suplex me on the floor right off the gate, I'm like, well, okay, that just shows there's no difference, you know. But like, if this entire time you're not able to suplex me, you can't take me off my feet, and we're still fighting, it builds up. So now we finally have our big blow off match, and you finally do bump me, it should mean a whole lot more. So,
absolutely, you need to be booked like Goldberg was in WCW NWO Revenge. That's what we need to be seeing when you come back. So, we are a one big family here at the Meltdown, and we understand that our AEW compadres are one big family as well. So as you're on the road with those guys, who you're traveling with, who you're sharing the road with, and some wonderful road stories is what we always like to look at.
Well, you know, what's funny is, like, on the actual road wise, not too often, like if you're actually, say, like, hitting the road, my travels with too many people, I usually, I'm so meticulous to my own schedule. That it's easier to do everything on my own. Now, there's obviously, like, the people I can't get with, or the people that will actually go to the gym with me, which actually, even then, Toa and Khan, who were with me in my tree and my faction, was the first people I've ever been paired up with that, like, we spent a crap ton of time together. And we're always right Ubering to and from the shows together. We're going to the gym together. We're doing, like, it's every time we'd hang out with other people that I was with, but that was the only time I was ever in an actual team. Here, Poppy, here. What happened? What'd you do? That, like, we actually, like, function as a team outside of the ring, not just inside the ring, which is great. Nana as well. Prince Nana was absolute joy to hang out with on top of that. So outside of that, like, story-wise or road story-wise, that's one question people ask me. I'm always like, oh, I feel like I should have some really great road story, but, like, I don't feel like there's nothing that's, like, especially just comical-wise, nothing ever jumps out of me, like, makes it. I feel like I have a lot more, you know, missed flight, delay flight, headache, freaking nightmare stories. Like,
we're a positive show, brother. Let's keep it.
Those happen far too often.
Dear. We're loving it.
Loving it. So let me ask you this, Brian. Switch gears here just a tad. Tell me, I've wondered this question. Who decided to team you up with Lance? And two-part question here. And also, was there natural chemistry with you two?
So I've the few times I've worked with Lance in the past, I've loved working with him. Him and I do get along really well. We're really good friends backstage. And he pitched the idea of us teaming together back in 2021. And he's been wanting to for quite a long time. And then he was pitching it again, and we were talking about it, like, with Tony a couple of different times, trying to have this idea of, like, oh, Wolfie team, we did this, we did that, we did this. And then they had the story where they needed this tag team with Don Callis to face Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. And then actually that never even end up happening. But that's what originally got us prepared, because like, oh, we've been pushing for it, and they were going to use Lance, and then like, oh, what about Brian if he joined in and as well? And it was right after I won the ROH TV title, and I was like, yeah, I'm down to do that. Let's go. And then it changed, but at least it finally got Lance and I together. You know, doing the team stuff, which we'd been wanting to do for quite some time. And we were, you know, had a decent amount of momentum build up. And so unfortunately, you know, the untimely knee injury, which kind of delayed some momentum that we had for sure.
Yeah. Whenever I hear, the Murder Machines mentioned, it always sends a chill, and I'm sure it does to your opponents, because you're just such dominating characters. They are awesome. Check out the Murder Machines if you can on Triller and Fight TV, wherever you are. You can pick it up all the way around the world. Now, when you speak about the Murder Hawk Monster, another name that is synonymous with him is obviously Jake the Snake Roberts. And one of the beautiful features of AEW is how inclusive they are when it comes to the legends of professional wrestling, whether it be Arn Anderson back in the day, Tully Blanchard, Jake the Snake, and so many more. What's it been like working alongside these icons of the past?
Oh, yeah, it's great that there's so many of them backstage. You know, they come and go. And definitely even I'll be the first to admit as well that I feel like I don't take advantage of having so many people backstage that you could talk to and, you know, pick their brains. Obviously, it's cool, and it's like the vast majority of us all, right? You know, we're all fans and all group being fans, so to have them there and talk to them is like, oh, cool. At the same time, sometimes you're like, oh, I don't want to bother them in that regard or whatever. But it is great that they're all there and that you are there able to. And then even more so when they come up to you, which I feel like is like a huge compliment and very respectful when they've come up to you, like even Jake, you brought him up, and they put you over themselves, or they give you, you know, a piece of worthy advice on their own accord. So you come to them is awesome. And I don't take that lightly, because that's so much cooler that they're finding the time to come to you and go, hey, you know what? I think this about whatever. Instead of you coming up and, you know, feeling like, I know you're not bothering them, that they're there also for that. But the fact that they're taking their own accord, I feel like, oh, that means they actually paid attention. They actually took the time and effort, you know, to watch your match and felt the need to, hey, I want to come tell you this, as opposed to like, hey, can you please come and watch my match and tell me this or give me feedback on that? The fact of them do it on their own to me is like, oh, wow. Like it means a lot to me. So
that natural sync is what you want. Absolutely.
Yes,
you
of
want
course. To
know that they've taken it upon themselves to critique you. It must mean the absolute world. I know that when I send messages over to Brian about what purchase I should make in TJ Maxx, I know he means
no,
so
much it's
to
fine.
Me.
It's fine. Sorry, my son's over here calling the police department. So
amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
What a call to make. I tell you what, right, just make sure that they know that you're all good.
Know, right?
Well, we're just coming off the heels of Father's Day, so we're still sending out the love to all the dads out there, keeping love in our hearts for all our wonderful parents and us as dads. We're loving it. So as we're flowing through, there is so many questions. Brian has gone deep into his research. And some incredible stuff on here. So we were just looking about your return there with Lance as you guys are building yourselves back up. As you return, do you think that's going to be in the creative for you guys to be paired back
up?
You
know what? I have no idea. I know there's been a couple of things. Like I said, I have a bunch of ideas, and I know there's been a couple of things that I briefly talked about with some people. But, I mean, it's hard to gauge, because there's a couple of different points I'd like to try to return. And also, I have no idea what will be happening. You know, also, I don't even know if, you know, which I know, I think they don't know what's going to happen. So it's hard to kind of factor in. It's going to kind of be more of a, you know, as time comes closer to the return, I feel like, you know, obviously we'd have a better glimpse on maybe what we'd be doing. So there's obviously unfinished business with Lance and I. And I feel like we did definitely picked up momentum. We didn't, there's a lot of matches we could have had and should have had that we didn't, which, you know, sucks that there wasn't a conclusion to that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, we'll see what happens.
That'd be awesome. Have you guys got a scope for a return date for you?
I technically do. And I know when I want to come back from, but I mean, I'm not going to say, because I don't want anybody to expect
absolutely.
Anything. So,
yeah. No, absolutely. Keep it in. Let's make it a shock. Let's make him pop. That's what it's all about, right?
That's what we're trying to get, that 2019 double or nothing surprise appearance return. Here we are. 6 years later. Let's do it.
Well, here's another idea you could do that you've already used, Brian, but just to refresh it for you, the idea of you carrying, I wish I would have thought of this. I mean, how cool. Do you remember when you were carrying two opponents to your, on your back to the ramp during Collision? You remember that? You were carrying.
Yeah, I know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, and I threw them over. Yeah.
I mean, classic, man. I was like, damn, why didn't I think of that back in the day? That was great. Love it.
There's a couple different. Like, you know, two people, I catch them and do a move together at the same time. Situations I've done, like, in matches. And Lance does that where, he'll drag an extra out and throw him out or whatever. And we were going to do that with these guys. We're just going to squash. And I was like, oh. I go, hey, come here. And I picked them both up. I go, I'm going to come out like this, and I'll throw you guys over on the ramp. Like, and they were like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, no problem. So they took the bump on the ramp like champs. So that was great.
Yeah, really good. Yes, I liked it.
Awesome. And there's not many people that can pull that off, right? You've got to have the right physique. And speaking of physique, that is what we are going to segue into right now. Because as you guys know, our wonderful listeners and viewers of The Meltdown, we like to quiz our amazing guests and put them under the spotlight, as it were. Yes, that magnifying glass is coming out and pointing over you, Mr. Cage, as I'm going to invite you to put together your Mount Rushmore of best pro wrestling physiques. So I need your top four. And then I'm going to come over to Mr. Clark, and he's going to give his four. We try to test you to see if there's a bit of compatibility, if you've guessed the same as each other. So I'm going to head it over to the Big Pimp D. Let's see exactly what he says. It's not going to go away now, mate. This is it. You made him for me.
Well, excluding myself, right? I'm not going to put myself on the list. Definitely the top two, without a doubt. Peak Triple H and Big Papa Pump, right, to me, are the two best bodies in all of wrestling, for sure, without a doubt. I would say Mount Rushmore, I mean, because it probably inspired so many in how he looked. Definitely Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And then for my fourth, man, there's people that look better. I'm going to give it up for especially for his age and for how consistently he's looked great. I'm going to go ahead and put Bobby Lashley in there.
Ooh, banger. Absolute banger. Well, let me just give a guess as to how many you're in sync with the Bomber. I'm reckoning two. What do you reckon, Mr. Clark? How am I on?
Let's see. Let's make him wait here. Okay. All right. My four, and of course, I have six, eight, ten. You know, as many
as
sure. So there's so many. Ultimate Warrior.
Yep.
Bobby Lashley.
Ooh, yep.
For his height, and you don't see this very often. Amazing chiseled look, Sid Vicious.
Yep.
And my fourth, Lex Luger.
Winner, chicken dinner. I told you you'd sink him for two. Yes.
Boom. You know, it's funny. You mentioned Sid, but also Vader, too. But we were talking about Sid and Body Guys. Those two guys, when I remember when I was growing up, were like the two guys I was the most afraid of as a kid. They would see me. I'd see them. I'd be terrified. And if they're wrestling one of my favorites, I'd be scared for them. Like, especially like when Shawn Michaels had his huge program with Sid Vicious. I'm like, yeah, get him, Shawn. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't think you want to wrestle him, Shawn. I was really scared.
Well, those were my four. And honestly, if you look at two more, if I could slide in, I would say Scott Steiner. And I'm not going to say this. I'm saying this not just because you're on this show, but of course you, Brian, because I mean, you are stacked, jacked, and ready to go, man.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it so much. Straight up. I put myself as all four, but that's just a little conceited, so I can't do that.
I'm going to make a visual of four Brian Cage heads right now.
Yeah, you have the faux hawk, the mohawk, the long hair, the beard, the cyber, you know, those different versions.
There's loads of versions of the Wolverine. We like it. We could go fully into that. I love it. One of the names that I was going to include in mine, very, very similar to yours, I had the Ultimate Warrior. I had Lex Luger. I had Scott Steiner. And the fourth is one that I feel gets overlooked a little bit because his size was a lot smaller. But by God, was he ripped. And it was ravishing Rick Rude. A physique.
I knew you were going to say Rick Rude. He's one that's commonly always mentioned. Yeah, he looked phenomenal, of course. He looked so good. But also, just for me, for like a body guy, I'm like, oh, I feel like he's just a little too small to fit to like that body guy role. But obviously, yes, phenomenal physique.
Yeah.
He was shredded, but I always thought to myself, okay, a little more quad work, right? A little bit bigger legs, and that would have really worked for him. He's definitely in the top 15.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. He looks amazing. And then I've always said, because we said peak, like, yeah, obviously Big Papa Pump was ridiculous. But post-quad surgery, when Triple H returned, I remember I was like, this guy is fucking huge. I remember when he came out with the denim leather jacket next to Big Show, obviously still like a foot shorter than Big Show, but like he looked wider than, like, I was like, man, he is freaking jacked to the gills right now. But like that was growing up, I remember peak Big Bad Booty Daddy and peak Triple H were like the two guys. I was like, these guys look amazing. You know, another one too for their hype. Didn't last that well in wrestling or was that good, but Nathan Jones was also a freak.
Oh, yes. Didn't last that long, you're right, but definitely, was he 6'9", I think, somewhere around
Yeah, he was huge, yeah.
Yeah, he was a monster, absolute monster. Well, as you just laid it down there about Triple H's 2002 return with the leather and the denim, that's what we need from Brian Cage on his return.
You know, I'm about to bring the leather, the denim, the plaid, the freaking, I mean, all the things, the snowboarding jacket, we're going to have them all.
Rip those arms off, brother. Let's go. Well, I like that. That's what we're all about. We're all about making beautiful emotions, putting smiles on faces and loving hearts. And with our game shows, I feel that we do that here on The Meltdown. So now that we've got our Mount Rushmores from both of you, I seem to have both hands up, which means we're going to go into our next feature, Winner Stays On. I'm about to pose some names to Mr. Brian Cage, and this week it's Winner Stays On AEW champions. So they could be world champion, it could be a tag team champion, it could be TNT champion, TBS champion. They've just been a champion in AEW. And all I need you to do, first name that comes into your head, you keep one, you bin one. Let's find out who wins out at the end. We are going to start with Chris Jericho and CM Punk.
Jericho.
Oh, Punk goes down. Jericho or Britt Baker?
Oh, Jericho.
Jericho or Timeless Tony Storm?
Ooh.
Tough one.
Right? I mean, actually, Jericho's one of my three Chris's, right? But two for thinking AEW Chris Jericho. Maybe he's not, you know, the same. Like, and Tony's just so brilliant. Well, I'll surprise. I'll say Tony. I'll pick Tony.
Nice. Jericho hit the walls. Jericho. Timeless Tony Storm, Hangman Adam Page.
Oh, Adam Page.
Adam Page or Cody Rhodes?
Adam Page.
Adam Page or John Moxley?
Adam Page.
We're keeping going.
Slingshot. Yeah.
He is. He's nailing it out of the park, isn't he? Adam Page or MJF?
Ooh. That's a tough one, too.
This is all fun. Remember, there's not any heat for whoever you pick.
It's funny too because I'm thinking both as a fan of AEW, but then also as like working with them as well. And it's like, oh man, it's so hard. Let's go MJF. Paige has been on there for a while.
Paige has taken it. The Hangman has faced the noose. MJF or Kenny Omega?
Kenny Omega.
MJF didn't last long, Brian. Kenny Omega or Swerve Strickland?
Oh, it's another good one. We'll keep Kenny in.
Okay. Kenny or Cody Rhodes?
Oh, Kenny.
Kenny all day. Kenny or Brian Danielson?
Oof, that's a good one. Man.
Give with one, you take with the other. Where are we going?
Right.
Kenny O'Brien. Kenny O'Brien.
Serving it up.
Brian's so good too. Let's go, Brian.
Yes, that one winged angel is crying somewhere right now. Brian or Ricky Starks?
Oh, Brian.
Keep it with Brian. Brian or Samoa Joe?
Brian.
Brian or Brian Cage?
I'll give it to Brian. I'll give it to Brian. Brian
yes, Danielson. Brother! We've rounded it out. Brian Danielson. On winner stays on the Brian Cage special. I'm going to make a note. I'm going to send that down the line. Bree is going to be so happy with you. Excellent. You've officially made the Christmas card list. Well done, Big Sir. Well done, well done. Love that. Mr. Clark, what do you reckon?
Great job, man. We really appreciate you playing along with us here today. And we just want to let you know, man, that, again, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know with your rehab, getting back, getting to 100%, actually 127%, as you like to say. Yeah. So, again, for taking the time to visit us on the Meltdown today and let you know that we will be waiting and watching for the return of the machine, Brian Cage, to AEW. So thank you again. We appreciate it.
I'm stoked to be on here. I had a good time with you guys. And yeah, I'm happy to come back at 127%. I can't wait for it. I've been thinking of different ideas. And there's so much I want to do too, like even just back in the gym. And I was like thinking of different protocols and diets. And like I'm so stoked. So this has been the longest I've probably been out. And it will be the longest I've ever been out from injury. It's also been the absolute most positive and not down at all. Not even a little bit. Like I've had some people checking on me. Have you doing okay? I go, which I know we can all get down, you know, being any sort of athlete when you're injured. I've been so happy, so content. And like, it's been a little bit of a blessing in disguise within my marriage and just being home with the kids and stuff. Like it's been, I don't want to say like, oh, I'm glad it happened, but there's definitely been, you know, a glass half full, that's, you know, as they say, things happen for a reason. Two things I want to touch on going back to as well. When I talked about all the different kids giving me grief about being a wrestling fan, wrestling shirts and exposing them. One person that never did and that always wanted to talk about wrestling was Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, that's great, man. That's awesome.
I love it. But hey, a scoop. We got another scoop. Who is Aaron's favorite? We get scoops.
Oh, we're all about the scoops. Who is Aaron's go-to?
That I have no idea, but he would just talk about Rod, like, and he never was like, oh, because I don't think he was like a super fan, but you know, like I said, I think everyone watched it to some degree there. And he would bring it up every now and then, like, oh, did you watch Raw or whatever? And he never thought it said anything negative at all about me liking it or wearing shirts or whatever. And then he never tried to act like he didn't like or didn't watch it too. So like, I will give it up for him for that in that regard. And to fall back to the Canyon story, though, I could talk forever about Canyon. That story of meeting him, I did an essay in high school afterwards about it, and then I sent it to his webmaster, Jared, on his website at the time, and he forwarded it to Canyon, and then Canyon emailed me, and that's how the conversation and then the friendship began with Chris Canyon. That's how it all started. And then I don't know if you know this either, Rath. I know it's been talked about multiple times, but when he officially retired, he actually gave me the Mortis outfit and asked me to do it to keep his name and check. And it was the purple one he had used in WWF or WWE in some dark matches, not the green one.
Right.
But I had the shoulder pads, the capes, the staff, the whole nine yards. And I did it several times. And I remember sending him the very first match I did. And I do a lot of Canyon's move set too. And I remember I stopped doing any of his moves. I'd only do him as Mortis because I do like double shots. And I remember the first match I did as Mortis, which was a really good match. And I sent it to him. And I remember, again, one of the coolest things that's happened to me. In all caps, he responded, absolutely phenomenal job as Mortis. Please keep doing it. So that was amazing. When I had gotten signed to WWE, I had sent him back the Mortis outfit because he said he might come back and do some stuff. And then he had reached out to me about doing a six-man tag. It It was going to be him, Raven, and myself as Mortis versus three other guys up in New York. And that was, the last time I talked to him, because it was about a week before he had passed. So that would have been incredible to have done it. And I remember too, even talking to him for a long time too, during that phone call. So it was an honor and a privilege to be able to portray Mortis. And his brother actually was going to give me the Mortis outfit and the whole costume after the Dark Side of the Ring episode. And we can't find it anywhere, which is so unfortunate. I'm so upset about it, but I mean, it is what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Piece of history right there, right?
Well, that's great that you were able to do that and you had his blessing, and obviously in all caps, send it back to you, man. So you must have done a phenomenal job.
It was, I couldn't ask for anything more. So between, you know, the meeting him, between getting to wrestle him in my hometown, and that's what I consider like my first like full pro wrestling match, and then getting that compliment, you know, portraying Mortis, definitely three milestone parts of my career, my life that I don't take lightly. So, and yeah, that is when people come over, that is one of my favorite things to show them is the Who Better Than Austin shirt that I have signed by Canyon. And I have the Who Better Than Canyon signed also by him, laminated above it as well. So
I want you to send us a picture of that. We're going to spread it out into the universe.
Yeah. Perfect. No worries. Up
here on the Meltdown. What an epic story. I know that Canyon, it holds a very, very special place in all of our hearts from his former tag team partner, the one and only Wrath. Yes, our very own Brian Clark. The blood still does run cold, brother. What a storyline. I felt like it was, and we talked about this before on the show, that if it was probably done just at the wrong time, just because the NWO and the reality angles were just coming in. It was overshadowed a little bit, but by God, that could have been just the most over thing in the world if it had come maybe 6 months earlier. What do you reckon?
I think you're on point there with that, Tom. But you know, we had such a really good time training for that. I mean, we spent 6 months at a dojo. We spent so much time down at the power plant working on the characters, the looks, the moveset, like you said, and Chris being so creative. Man, it seemed like each day we would come up with new stuff. And it's amazing because even now I see some moves that I'm thinking, hey, we did that, or maybe they got that from us. Who knows?
But actually,
either way, very cool.
I told Lance that I wanted to start doing was the reverse crab leg drop that you guys used to do too.
Yes.
I want to see you hitting some meltdowns, brother. Bring it back strong.
Okay. All right. I'll put that on the list too. I'll put that on the list as well.
You just can't let them kick out.
I will pin him. So then how about that?
Okay, even better, man. Love to see it. My blessing. The meltdown is yours, man. Do it.
Thank you.
Absolute superstar. And for all our wonderful fans that remember the Meltdown in its infancy, you'll remember that we were taking looks at the WWE Vault and WCW channels on YouTube. And you can check out all of Mortis's dark matches where he does wear that black and purple outfit right now. Load up your Google machine, type in YouTube, head over to WWE Vault, and you'll be able to check out all those hidden gems. Well. I'm going to leave you with one very, very important question. Who better than Brian Cage? Ladies and gentlemen, the Machine has joined us. Thank you so much, Brian. You absolute icon. You are welcome anytime.
Hey, guys. So much fun chatting with you. All right. Until the next time.
Who better than Brian Cage? He is the Machine, right? What an absolute beast. He has peaks for days and stories to go with them. We can't wait to welcome back. Right, Brian? We want him back on the Meltdown as soon as he is fit, as soon as he is healthy, as soon as he's back on that road with AEW. We're going to throw it out and reel him back in. And maybe, just maybe, we'll be joined by the Murder Hawk monster as well. How awesome would that double shot be? Well, speaking of double shots, I've got a double shot, literally like a shotgun blast, bang, bang, from our Meltdown mailbag this beautiful Meltdown Monday. And once again, we are spreading the board but not across the world this week. Oh, no, no, because we've got some big questions from across the pond. Our first question comes from a legend in the Meltdown universe, the one and only Aaron Spaulding from Mesa, Arizona, has asked the question to you, brother. After you retired in 2003 due to injuries, was there any thought of returning to the ring for another run?
Wow. Hey, great question, Aaron. And again, welcome to the Meltdown. I mean, you hit me with a fresh question, and I like that because it's been a long time. You see, that's fresh. That's fresh as monkey's breath, brother. That is fresh. Listen, I honestly, I sort of knew when to say when. That's one thing I can definitely agree with myself, is that I had enough injuries and enough time, and I just knew that the foundation of what I had laid out and the way my career ended with three World Tag Team Championships, the All Japan Champions, very happy and blessed with my career. But yeah, I knew when to say when, Aaron. So thank you for the question, my friend.
It's beautifully refreshing to see athletes such as yourself tap at the right time, because there's certain ones that will go and will come back and will go and will come back and will go. And it doesn't mean as much each and every time they do it, to the point where it's just another show. To tap out while you're at your top of your game gives you legendary status. And we know that Brian Clark is living on the edge of a lightning bolt. He is legendary status. So thank you, Aaron, for that question. Very insightful. We love that. Our next question came directly from our last guest who posed it after the cameras stopped a rolling. So this one is from Mr. Brian Cage in Los Angeles, California. And he has asked our very own creation Devastation, who was the favorite character that you ever portrayed?
Wow, that's a tough one. I think I answered this question too, Brian. So you guys will definitely have to go back and watch this show because you're going to enjoy it anyway. I answered that question with saying that Wrath, actually, both parts of Wrath, and there's a third part to this also, but there was two parts to Wrath, the very initial part with Chris Kanyon as my tag team partner, and of course, when Wrath developed, invented, created the Meltdown and went on an undefeated streak. Now, that was great, great. I love both of those. But I would be completely wrong if I did not mention the run of Chronic right over my shoulder right there. I mean, the high times, you know, I mean, we had it going on. So I, honestly, to answer that, I would say my time in WCW was my favorite.
What a great answer. Thank you so much, Brian, for laying that one up for our big brother. He has just dropped the bomb on you. And there you go. WCW was a big highlight for the one and only Mr. Clark. Now, as we get further into the summer, we have got a mega event coming up with the WWE. It's SummerSlam season, baby. And this year, they're not just hitting you up with one night. Oh, no, it's double bubble. We are going to have a brilliant time on the 2nd and 3rd of August as that summer heat drifts in. And you guys remember, if we hit a big number, I might just be taking a nice plunge challenge. But seeing as it's SummerSlam season, Brian Clark has got a very interesting proposition for you all.
Well, it is SummerSlam, and we do like to give away merchandise here on the Meltdown. So, got a little surprise. A friend of mine just happened to mail me some goodies, and I'm going to start with this. Here we go.
Oh, baby.
All right. Brand new trading cards. First
Look
ever Chronic.
That.
You see how I got Tom to just roll right
just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Now, I think that this will do it.
Holy balls! My goodness gracious me, look at those bad boys.
First ever chronic figures, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what? I happen to have some extra of these. So I'm thinking maybe SummerSlam giveaway. What do you think, Tom?
You've laid it up now. You can't take it back. No,
that's all right. We'll do it.
Giver. No take back. There we go.
We can do it.
Okay. So shall we keep it with the same concept? Shall we throw that out there into the universe?
I think that is the absolute best way to go because there's never two exact answers.
No.
So, and or guess.
As it spread over two nights, we are going to ask our Meltdown universe to send us your guess for the total capacity of SummerSlam. How many people are going to be in attendance for the 2 days combined? Like the merging of the mega powers. We need to find out what your guess is going to be for the attendance of both days combined. Whoever gets nearest to the pin is going to walk away with a beautiful prize pack from the bomb shelter itself. The creation of Devastation is going to mail it off straight from his own firm Meltdown hands. It's going to be a nuclear blast. What a competition lineup, brother. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, speaking of future shows, we are going to be edging very steadily into July, and we have got some big names that are currently on the bubble. And it's not just professional wrestling. Oh, no, no. I don't want to give away any hints, Brian. I don't want to give away any hints.
I know, because, you know, we advertise as we're growing each and every day, as I said earlier we just had Brian Cage. So we have some major league players from pro sports, Hollywood, legendary, possibly MMA. I'm going to tell you, I don't want to give it away either.
No,
but there are so many people that we are excited to be able to bring to you listeners out there. You're going to love it. That's all I can tell you.
We're ecstatic. The future is very, very bright for the Meltdown that I think we all need to get some Adam Bomb visors. Let's get them in, lock them in, and you'll make sure that you are ready for the nuclear blast. Well, I think we're about set to put a nice big bow, as we do each and every week, on another episode of The Meltdown. Thank you so much to The Machine for joining us this week and opening up the books when it came to looking at his brilliant career, his wonderful rejuvenation throughout rehabilitation after surgery, and all the positivity that he brings to the table. Remembering an icon in Chris Kanyon and truly taking us through a journey of what is to come. So from me here in Manchester, my name's still Tom Finkill. We will love you and leave you and see you next Meltdown Monday. Good night. God bless.
Thank you again, everyone. We appreciate you all checking with us each and every Monday because we're going to be doing what we do best each and every Monday, bringing you the superstars of the world. That's right. We are breaking necks and cashing checks. So long from Tucson, Arizona. See you next Monday.
Oh, boom.